Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Project Rudy. How do you feel about Project Rudy? 713-780-3776. We'll get to the Casario mistakes, if you feel there are any, if there are names that you think that the Texans should be kicking the tires on in a moment. But let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Jerry, you're in the hive with the Bees. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I like Project Rudy. The hedge fund's putting in $5 billion. I hate to lose Boise State, Tulane, Washington State, et cetera, and I don't see why it would be so difficult to have a Tier 4 and a Tier 5. I mean, the amount that you would pay them obviously would be less, and that just seems kind of like an afterthought and wouldn't be difficult. Another question I have is, if you're in Tier 1, do you only play Tier 1? Is your entire schedule against Tier 1? And I will hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Jerry.
The
way that I understand it, you're still going to have the conferences. You're still going to have SEC. You're still going to have Big Ten. You're still going to have the ACC. You're
SEC
still going to have the Big 12.
SEC schools will be playing a part of this. It's like a 9-game SEC schedule.
And I think that that's a fixed number for every conference to use. It's just that you're out of conference games. And I don't know how those would be scheduled. I don't know
you
if
wouldn't
the,
have, cause, well, there's what, 16 Tier 1 schools? You wouldn't be playing against I think you could play anyone within inside the 70.
Yeah, but
I
don't know
who's
deciding how those games are being played. Like,
that
currently,
is the
you have
ADs
and coaches that come to terms. Okay, we're going to play this year, that year. This is where we're playing 2-for-1 neutral site. I don't know if that would stay in play or if this governing body would be scheduling games. I think if I had to guess, it'd be the former, not the latter. I don't think that these universities are going to give up the power of controlling their own out-of-conference schedule. I don't think that they would like that. So I believe that it would still kind of be similar to the schedules that you currently see, but you wouldn't have that weird week late in the year where the SEC is playing non-conferences against the Sun Belt.
Right.
They're not playing, you know, Northwestern State.
No layups with just some kind of cash payout for the lesser.
You would be restricted to only playing out-of-conference games with the top 70. So to Jerry's point about the Tier 4, the Tier 5, I actually would like that more, Jerry. I agree with you because I think it'd be awesome to keep everybody involved, and then your Boise State's all of a sudden they're a Tier 2 school. I think that would be really, really cool. I would be in favor of that. I think the difficult part about this, though, is that these hedge funds and the capital funds that are generating all of this money and the billions of dollars into this, I think they see a pretty significant drop off in money that they're bringing in if they're including the Mountain West Conference, if they're including what's left of the pack, if they're including the Sun Belt. So I would love to see it. I just don't think that the hedge funds and all of the money behind it feels like there is enough payoff once you get below the Tier 3.
Yeah, that's the problem, because in order to justify adding more payouts, as you said, Jeremy, you have to actually be bringing in something. And I think the feeling is these schools that are getting left out, the Tulanes, the Boise States, whatever, they're not bringing in TV markets that they don't already have for the most part, and they're also not bringing in TV revenue that they don't already have.
Yep.
So if you're not bringing anything to the table, then you're just dividing out what's already there by more pieces, but not actually bringing anything in. So you're lessening the payouts for the other 70 schools that were already in there, so there's no benefit for them.
And I wouldn't hate like cherry picking like 5 or 6 more. Like if you feel like there is financial gain there, if you feel like there's 3 or 4 schools that are not currently in the Power
State.
4, it's like okay,
Oregon
right, we'll
State.
Take you. Yeah, you know, yeah, whoever that is.
There's got to be a couple that either have a reputation like a Boise State that in the past has been able to be competitive, no matter who they play in football. But yeah, an Oregon State is a team that, you know, has never been like the they've been They've had bad years, but for the most part, they've been a decent football program.
I don't even know, though, if results on the field will play in.
Exactly.
It's just because a part of what this article is talking about is like there's a very few amount of teams that are bringing in like 60% of the broadcast revenue. It's a small fraction. So if these schools aren't making a difference as far as the networks or in the money's concerned with the TV deals, then they're not getting in.
Yeah, it's more about the dollars. The scoreboard doesn't matter. Who's winning the games doesn't matter outside of the P4. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener. I love the name. Jay Bowen welcoming in. Jay Dog, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up, Jay Dog?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I agree and disagree. Maybe once we see how it all plays out, maybe I'll be more for it. Now, me being a Canes fan, I get it. I'm kind of under the impression we are the one who got everybody caught. So we started all this, and we'll be the reason it'll be a salary cap, because who doesn't want to go to Miami and play and get paid? But also, we do have the Boise State, like you just said, the BYUs and all of these teams. It's always a surprise team. And just like we know now, it's college. It differs from the NFL. But there will be one or two surprise teams in the teams in the playoffs, and they might win the first round, and they may win the second round. So I just want to see how it all works out in the beginning, and then maybe as time goes on, then maybe we can move from there. But I'm just excited to see how it all is going to start. I appreciate you guys.
I love the relegation promotion aspect of it the most.
I think that's really cool.
Now, if you could add the Tier 4s and the Tier 5s, like Jerry said, I think that'd be perfect, because now you're not leaving anybody behind. And I do hate the idea that you're leaving people behind, and I think J-Dog's point's a good one. You know, like maybe Boise State can make a run to the semifinals, and if Boise State can sustain 3 good years, now they're a Tier 2, Tier 3 school. Now look at all the revenue they're bringing in. I would love to include everybody, but if you gun to my head, do you go with the top 70, or do you go with what you currently have in place? I'd rather go with the top 70 in the Rudy Project than when you currently have in place. Maybe that's cold-blooded of me. I'm sorry. I know I was in that position a couple of years ago. BYU wouldn't factor in right to being outside of the top 70 because they are Big 12, so they are Power 4. But the promotion delegation's enough for me. I've always been a big fan of promotion delegation in college football. I think it'd be perfect.
Yeah,
perfect in college football.
The big thing was, depending on how it shakes out, and this is great because at least it seems there's enough substance here that you could actually keep working and trying to iron out some of the wrinkles. But at the same time, I would love to see some of the outside looking ins and the relegation and promotion thing, where if you ended up winning the outside of the top 70 aspect of it, then maybe that allows you the next year to have a chance.
Yeah, maybe you can have one or two extra spots factored into this, where the best of the non group of 70 or whatever term we're giving for this are able to get in on a year by year basis, and then maybe go and play relegation and promotion like the rest of the teams.
I like that idea. Like, if you can still work your way into the top 70. It's very similar to what they do in the European soccer model. Mm-hmm. You can go from being, League One to the Champions League, depending on how you fare. It's also kind of similar to the PGA. And there, what are they? Is the Corn Ferry these days?
Yep,
they always change the sponsorship on it. I don't ever know. The Corn Ferry has their top, 30 players that get promoted from the Corn Ferry up to the PGA. So that'd be a cool element, too. Let's compromise here. We're not going to have Tier 4 and Tier 5 because it doesn't make financial sense. But to throw a bone your way, top 3, top 4 schools, they're going to be in the in the top 70. But as I'm thinking about it out loud now, good luck getting the top 70 to agree to delegation out of the top 70.
Yeah, no, I think it would just have to be a rotating, let's say right now we're in a group of 70. Let's call it the group of 75. That last five, I think, would the 70 would remain the 70. I think, because you're right, they wouldn't agree to get relegated.
Yeah.
But what you could agree to is maybe adding 5 spots in those teams outside the 70 would rotate year after year depending on their success outside the 70.
Okay.
Like floaters, or would you rather have?
But what if they get in there and have success?
I know it's
that's where they would
stay in that five. They would basically be a part of, I guess, Tier 3 at that point.
Okay.
And or they would you stay have in them as long play as they keep out having success?
Would you have, say, those top four teams play it out, and then have that one team or two teams?
You could have like the bottom two teams of that rotating five play the top two teams of the outside 70 in like bowl games where the winner stays in the big leagues or whatever. Yep. That'd be kind of cool. Look at us just figuring
those
things out.
Those games would have stakes. That'd be a lot of fun.
Look at us figuring things out. You know what they should do? Screw Project Rudy. Screw all of that. Screw the Smash Play. Just let the Killer Bees figure it out.
Project Killer Bee.
Yeah, Killer Bee. Mm-hmm. Just give us all the money. We'll figure it all
the
out.
$5 billion.
We'll pocket a few of those million. Yeah, pay us a couple of million, and then we'll have the Project Killer Bees. And college football will be fixed.
We'll bet it all on Baltimore versus Washington coming up.
All right, let's get to the Caserio conversation. Does this injury make you regret any of Caserio's moves so far this season? Are there names that are out there that you would kick the tires on if you're the Houston Texans? 713-780-3776. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Joe George used to be the Queen Bee.
He did.
He was the original Queen Bee. He can still be the Queen Bee, even though he's no longer with us.
Yeah. He's honorary. He's been in the hive.
8143, how do you figure out who's in Tier 1? Is it the top three from each of the four power conferences and the next best four? I think they'd probably go more off of, like, who's doing numbers in terms of viewership and TV figures and all of that, and then based on year by year, it would go more win-loss record. But I think you would set the tiers based on their cachet as a college football program. So you get to all your blue bloods, your Alabamas, your Texases, your Notre Dames, your Ohio States, and then they're talking about keeping some of them fixed in the Tier 1 and then having like four or five of those that can interchange from year in, year out. I think that's how you would determine it, although I don't think it said that one. Will someone please tell Branham it's relegation, not delegation? He won't stop. I thought it was both. I thought you could say delegate.
Delegate would be like giving responsibilities to someone else, right?
Yeah,
I thought so. I thought I've heard that before. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. I don't live in Europe. My bad if I am wrong.
Do you think of the example of that when you talk about like the cachet and kind of like the hype train is like when Deion was at Jackson State, when like if they have a good year and also the fact that there's a huge marketability and attention to like from a television perspective?
I don't think Jackson State would be, no.
No.
Not a Jackson State.
I'm just saying, like a smaller school
the
that has some kind of a, yeah, an idea
sure,
like that.
Specifically Jackson State, though.
No, but I'm saying like a tier four or five school that suddenly gets like a, you know, either a big coaching name or something and a few players to go with it to where that's a team they're watching.
I don't think so.
Because you can't do it from year to year, right?
No, I mean, they're looking specifically at the Power Four. We're kind of creating the rules on everything else. They're looking specifically at the Power Four. Anything out of the Power Four would not be included in the Power Four.
No, I'm just saying, like, if we were talking about, like, at the very bottom, they would still have to just win their schedule win whatever tournament or however playoff they have.
No, in order to be in the Rudy Project, you would have to be in a Power Four conference.
No, I'm saying if we were adding, like, the outside schools, if they had the top four play each other and play, to try and get in, so we left two spots open.
I mean, we invented that. That's not real.
Like, well, I understand that, but I'm saying when you start talking about revenue being more than what's on the field.
Well, I think revenue would establish the initial tiers, but then you start winning and you get promoted, and if you start losing, you get relegated. I did
it.
I got it right.
You got it.
I got it relegated. You lose, you get relegated. You win, you get promoted. But no, the tiers would be, you know, cachet initially, I believe, but only Power Four schools. Anybody out of the Power Four is done. You do not exist when it comes to big boy college football anymore. Does the Nico Collins injury make you regret any of Nick Caserio's moves this season? This season alone, Ocho is going to say not taking Brian Thomas Jr., even though you didn't have that chance, although you could have just stuck and picked. Does the injury, the Nico, make you regret any of Caserio's moves this season so far?
The moves that he's made, no. It doesn't. It actually makes me thankful that there's still money to spend if you do find out at some point that this is more significant than it currently is, or that, you know, you want to do some other things. But I don't regret anything. I think it actually makes me feel better about the fact that you went and made a move for a Stephon Diggs, because now you've got a deeper wide receiver room with receivers that have a boatload of talent that have the ability to step in and fill in while he's out, as opposed to what you were dealing with maybe even a year ago. So I don't look at any of the moves off the top of my head and say, no, there's a move. I regret that he made that move.
For me, it's Noah Brown. And it's easy. easy. I regret that one. Easy. And it's easy to have a guy that he would replace on the 53, Steven Sims. If I could have a move that Caserio has made this season that I would want back, very, very easily, Steven Sims is not on this team. Robert Woods is my punt returner from day one. Sims does nothing on the offensive side. Noah Brown, you're still a Houston Texan. That's the one move that I regret.
That makes sense. I haven't seen if he's done anything in Washington.
He's played a little bit. He's actually banged up. Shocker.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that was the thing that would worry me, is that he might be more hurt or hurt at the same time Nico is.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't have had the reps that with the Texans that he had with Washington. He's been okay for them because they don't have a clear-cut number two. You know, they have Scary Terry, obviously. Brown has had every single game he's played in, he's had three catches. So he's been okay. Like, he's played for them. But I'd rather have Noah Brown on this team than Steven Sims on this team, especially now with the Nico Collins injury. I'd probably rather have Noah Brown on this team than John Metchie because of the Nico Collins injury. So I look at the Noah Brown as the obvious for me. Anything other than that, no. But Noah Brown would be the one that I have. How about any names that are out there or could be out there that you would kick the tires on?
Yeah, I saw one in an article this morning that was a little bit interesting to me, but it doesn't exactly fix whatever problem might be this is a lingering issue with Nico. But the fact that Hunter Renfro is still out there, and Hunter Renfro is a guy that is a veteran receiver that has a knack for getting open and making tough catches. If you find out that this is a longer injury than 4 weeks, if you find out that Woods and Hutchinson and the Metchie types aren't doing it, there's a guy that's still unsigned that's out there that has plenty of NFL experience that I don't know what the shape he's currently in, but there's a guy out there that at least I raised my eyebrow to say, well, I mean, there's another guy that could make reliable catches for you.
I don't know if he's ever been in great shape, that Hunter Renfro. I don't think it helps you. Renfro is very much a slot receiver. Yeah. I think the Texans have enough inside guys. I think Stephon Diggs is an inside guy. Tank Dell can do both. People think he's better in the slot, but did play more outside last year than inside. Robert Woods, a little bit more inside guy at this stage of his career. And then you have John Metchie. So Renfro doesn't do anything for me. He doesn't move my needle.
I think Renfro's better than John Metchie. I mean, obviously.
I don't know.
I think it's pretty – well, we'll have to see what kind of shape and state he's in. He's also had injury problems. But he's got a 1,000-yard season in his past, or maybe it was 100 catches. I don't remember what
21.
It was.
He did both. He was 103 catches, over 1,000 yards. He actually had 9 touchdowns that year.
Yeah. So
and then he's done nothing since.
Went from, like, a premier receiver to falling off the
planet. Well, they added Davante Adams. Like, that season where he had the 100 and 1,000 was without Davante Adams. They had Davante Adams, and shockingly, his usage went way down. So, I think
Devontae's first year in Vegas was 2 years ago?
This is his third season, yes.
Okay. Yeah, he also had concussions that year, Renfro didn't.
Yeah.
Remember, he got concussed.
They also added Jacoby Myers, so that took more off of Renfro's plate. And like you said, he's had injuries and concussions. So I think he's better than Metchie. The problem is, as Jeremy talked about with the slot, like, you lost your deep threat, your outside alpha over the middle, over the deep part of the field. You add Renfro, he doesn't help you there. So you're still kind of in the same boat as you are now.
But doesn't he help you if you want to play Tank more outside or Diggs more outside, that you have a guy that you could put in the slot? Devil's advocate.
You'd have to think he's better than Woods and Metchie.
I feel like he's better than Metchie. I think he could be better than Woods in the slot.
That Raiders team, by the way, in 22, like, they had incredible skill.
Darren Waller, Renfro.
Josh Jacobs went over 2,000 yards that year, total yards.
Total yards.
They had Davante Adams go over 1,500 total yards that year. They didn't add Myers yet, but they had Mac Hollins. So I'm a big fan of Mac Hollins. I think he's just a good football player, maybe not a great receiver. They had Darren Waller.
Yep.
Darren Waller, who was actually – Darren Waller. That's when he fell off. He had injuries, only played 9 games. He was really good the year before. But, yeah, that was a weird team. It's really odd to me that Hunter Renfro's not on a football team.
That's where I was going with Brian's point. Was like, it's one thing to say Davante Adams and some of the guys they brought in. Why has he not made another roster anywhere?
And the fact that he's not on a football team makes me not want him on my football team. Like, if he's not on a football team on October 9th, I don't want him on my football team.
Intern Kevin wants me to mention Michael Thomas, but Thomas.
That's
is
what
a
I did.
Ball.
I looked up there. I looked up the list of the guys that are still out there. Michael Thomas is number one. Michael Thomas and Hunter Renfro is number two. Corey Davis, then Julio Jones, who no one I think wants at this point in his career.
No, he's washed.
And then a bunch of guys that either are washed or don't do anything for me, like Chase Claypool and Randall Cobb and guys like that. Dante Pettis. But Michael Thomas, to me, is more volatile in the locker room than any guy that you could possibly imagine bringing into your locker room at this point.
He hasn't had a productive season since 2019. That, like, all-world 140-plus catch season was 2019. He hasn't done anything since then.
Yeah.
He's washed.
Y'all missed one.
Who?
Was there a tube or
something? ESPN himself.
Oh, Antonio Brown.
He was in Houston last week.
Yeah, did you see him swinging in that home run derby?
Look good.
Swinging in.
He took off his shirt. He looked good. He can still run some routes for you.
Work boots?
I don't know. I didn't.
He was in the batting cages, in very high work boots.
Athletes taking baseball swings or softball swings is the great equalizer.
In
athleticism and sports. I'm obviously kidding on Antonio Brown. There aren't really names out there that interest me. Like, you go with who you have. You have a deep wide receiver room. These are your guys. Like, these are your guys. I'm not looking to add anybody right now.
No, I had a buddy of mine say, would Green Bay trade Dobbs? One, you don't need, if you're the Texans, you don't want to make any trades right now because you're just trying to figure out what this injury really is and the extent of it. But two, Green Bay's not going to give up on Dobbs just like that.
Well, and Dobbs is pouty. Would you really want to bring that guy
in? He's back now this week.
I know, but the reason he got suspended is he's been pouting and whining about his targets. You bring him here, he's going to be what? Fourth in the target share, so I don't know if I really like that situation.
Plus,
for him.
What are you wanting to give up for what you hope is only a 4-week injury?
Not much.
Yeah. You're like right. a fifth, sixth, at most. Probably not even a fifth.
And Green Bay's probably not giving up Dobbs for that.
I think Dobbs could be a chief.
Maybe.
Yeah,
I think he might be a chief.
I can see that.
A texter says reunion with D-Hop. Titans are trash. Might be sellers, question mark. Will Amy Adams stunk
no way
trade DeAndre Hopkins
and
to
Hopkins
the Texans?
Is playing on what? Was it a torn MCL, PCL, yeah, something like that?
He looks fine, though.
Like, I know, I've but there was a good, report at the beginning of the season.
No doubt. But playing on... Right. You're right. That is out there. I believe it. But he actually does look pretty good. Like, he looks like normal DeAndre Hopkins.
We can put all that to bed regardless just because of the fact that there's no way Amy the Skunk is going to make a trade to help the Texans.
Yeah. I mean, if you could get D-Hop for a seventh rounder, okay, let's talk. But I don't think he's going to be out there. 4133 Branham, who says 1,000? It's called 1,000. Did I say that? I might have said that with Hunter Renfro.
If you did, I didn't hear it.
Sometimes I get going. Sometimes I get going a little too fast, get out ahead of my skis, and I say
I've
things
that I
shouldn't.
I've tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect, and I'm a knucklehead at times.
Yeah, thanks for calling me out on that one, 4133. I deserve to be called out for that. That's my bad. 1,000.
1,000. Otherwise known as 1,000.
That's hilarious. I didn't realize I did that. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What are some names out there that you'd want to bring in? Or maybe it's none of the above. Maybe you don't want anybody here. You just want to go with what you have. That's where I stand. 713-780-3776. Also, where do you stand on trading Jake Myers? It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
King of Twitch says Hunter Biden better than Hunter Renfro. Come on, King of Twitch.
Have we checked Hunter Renfro's emails yet?
I haven't. Maybe that's why he's not playing in the NFL.
Yeah, maybe so.
But why isn't Hunter Renfro playing in the NFL?
That's the crazy thing to me, is because he was a premier receiver, a very sought-after, highly respected receiver his early days in with the Raiders. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, it's one thing to say, okay, he's out of favor because of the guys they brought in with Las Vegas. Someone else should be picking him
Maybe
up.
He can't pass the physical. I mean, that might be what it is in all this.
But he hasn't even been brought in for physicals.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the concussion
what's
history?
What's he not passing, because of the concussions?
Could be. I mean, he had injuries beyond the concussions, but, I mean, that would be probably the biggest one he'd have to answer.
Maybe he just didn't want to play.
Could be.
Maybe he didn't have a love for the game. Maybe he's like Brian Thomas Jr. He just doesn't love football.
What did Ocho think about Renfro?
Yeah. Ocho, did you like Renfro? I don't know. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line. I was thinking about this today. A bunch of people on Twitter were talking about the Astros offseason and, you know, competitive balance tax and payroll. And Dana Brown talked last week about, you know, they have to be creative on how they can add to this team. It sounds to me like they don't want to spend a ton of money. Like, if you're talking about having to be creative with the payroll and creating how to help the team and, you know, playing prospects, that reads to me as an organization that might not want to spend a ton of money. Maybe I'm wrong, and we've seen Jim Crane, when he gets enamored by an idea, is willing to spend. He did it with Josh Hader. You know, maybe it was because of his reaction to the Kendall Graveman news. He did trade for Zach Greinke at the deadline. So he's went over the competitive balance twice. Now, he went over the competitive balance tax last year, and they were out in the wild card round. How does he react to that? I don't know. Time will tell. But I started to think about Jake Meyers, and I'm not a big fan of trading players whenever their value's down. Like, I'm not trading Chaz McCormick. People are like, oh, get rid of Chaz McCormick. He's a bum. He's not good. We know that Chaz McCormick 2 years ago hit over 270, hit over 840, he hit 22 home runs. I'm not going to trade that guy a year later after he hit 211 with a 576 OPS, because now I'm trading when his value is at the absolute bottom. Whenever it's at its floor, I'm losing from that commodity that is Chaz McCormick. So I have no interest in trading Chaz McCormick. I'm trying to get Chaz McCormick back to his 2023 form. But what about Jake Meyers? And look, Jake Meyers plays really good defense. Jake Meyers plays top 10 level center field, which is a premium defensive position. But if you think that this is who Jake Meyers is, you know, just a really good defensive center fielder that's going to have an OPS plus of around 86 and 85 like he has done the last 2 years, a career OPS plus of 86, a WAR about 1.5 the last 2 years. If you believe that Jake Meyers is who he is, he's going to be 29 years old next year. This might be peak value for Jake Meyers. Maybe it's Jake Meyers that is the center fielder that you should be looking to trade, because there is a demand around Major League Baseball for center fielders who play a high level defensively that can't hit a lick. Kevin Kiermaier, now his offense had improved the last couple of years, but Kevin Kiermaier is getting double digit millions of dollars for just playing really good center field. So I do think that Jake Meyers could actually bring something back. I think you're selling Jake Meyers at pretty close to his peak value, whereas Chaz McCormick, if you're trading him, he's at his lowest value.
I mean, to your point, Harrison Bader's a guy that continues to get money and decent money to go play center field, and he can't hit. You know how I feel about this. I mean, I think you've always been higher on Jake than I've been, and I'm fine trading Jake Meyers. I'm fine if you take a little bit of a step back in terms of the overall defense you get from Jake Meyers to get someone that brings offense to the table, whether that's Chaz and Dubon, and you just do something internally to use one of those guys, or you feel like there's another option that you can find or you're going to bring up that could play center field. I don't believe in Jake Meyers. I don't like just overall when my eye test, when I watch him in terms of, I do think that we've seen the best of Jake Meyers, and I don't know how much longer you want to wait to just take Jake for what he is. And if there is a team that's out there that's interested in taking Jake Meyers, in my mind, take Jake Meyers.
King of Twitch says that Jake has the value of BMAC right now. That's not very nice. We're going to put that in mean text. See, I think Jake has more value than King of Twitch is giving him credit for. Like, I don't think that you're trading for a cleanup man. I don't think that you're trading for a top half of the rotation starter. But can you get your third best reliever? Can you get a first baseman who is on the final year of his deal that's easily an upgrade at first base? Can you find maybe that's a third baseman? Maybe you can find a third baseman in the trade market that a team's trying to get rid of because they have a surplus at the position. They have a weakness in center field defense. They want to play up their center field defense because maybe they have a good pitching staff and they have a third baseman that's a surplus that's on the final year of his deal. Like, I'm not saying that you're getting a superstar for Jake Meyers, but can you get a player that helps your team for Jake Meyers? Whenever you have a center fielder in Chaz McCormick, who's kind of similar to the value that you're getting there, Dana Brown mentioned that Jacob Melton might get a look this year for the Astros, who is a left-handed bat, that they like his defense in center field too. So there's your another center field option. Dubon's your emergency third center fielder if you want. I think that you could find something for Jake Meyers that would help your team next year.
Yeah, as long as there's a team willing to give you something like that, that is interested enough in Jake Meyers to give you something of value in return, I'm fine with it. Because, like I said, I mentioned, if you're going to promote a guy from, if it's Melton or somebody else, great. If you have other aspirations for, if Chaz does, you're going to give Chaz an opportunity to turn it around, you're going to give him the chance to start in center field, so be it. But I'm totally fine if that's one of the positions you identify and say they're ready to go in a different direction and Jake isn't their guy, because Jake hasn't been my guy. You guys know how down I was to start the year on him. And yeah, early on he had a little hot streak offensively, which was surprising to me, but he still was playing defense. I hate his arm as well, so I'm fine moving on from Jake Myers.
You're not really upgrading your arm if Chaz is your center fielder?
No.
They have pretty even arms, and you are losing defense there. And quite frankly, Jake Myers is a better offensive player than Chaz this year. But if you're going off next year, who's going to be a better player for you, Jake or Chaz?
I think Chaz.
I think it could be, like, even if it's a tie, I think you're getting more in return in a trade for Jake than you would Chaz.
Oh, I agree with that.
Last year, I was ready to trade Chaz last year because I wanted to trade him after, you know, his peak season, whenever his value is at his highest. But I'm not trading him when he's at his lowest. I don't think that Jake Myers has much more than what we've seen. Like, I think this is Jake Myers' peak value as a Major League Baseball player. Well, what do you mean? He's not a very good. He was not a good offensive season. He had an 85 OPS plus. 2023 had an 86 OPS plus. His career OPS plus is 86. I think we've seen Jake Myers plateau for who he is. Really good defensive center fielder, not a good bat. Major League Baseball does value good defensive center fielders. I think you can trade him. Chaz McCormick is equal or better in center field than Jake Myers. You have a young guy that you want to give reps out in center field at some point. Why not trade Jake Myers for something that can help your big league team? Whether it's a first baseman on the final year of his deal, whether it's a third baseman on the final year of his deal because you lose Bregman, whether it's your fourth best relief pitcher.
I think that's the
best.
Your
fourth best relief pitcher.
I think that's the best case scenario, is that you can get a relief pitcher. I just don't know that what you're getting in terms of the other guys you mentioned, like unless it's a last year guy that they need to move on from, that's a different story. But I think other than that, I'm thinking like J.D. Davis guys or guys that are just, you know, like really short term, not anything that you're going to, you know, write home about, but you get something for him and it gives you, I think, a chance to be better offensively no matter what.
Yeah, like I don't think that I am overselling what you can get in return for Jake Myers. You're not getting a star for Jake Myers. You're not getting one of your top six guys in your batting order. I don't even think you're getting a starting pitcher. Like maybe a number five guy, doubtful though. I don't think you're getting a starting pitcher. I think you're getting a guy in the final year of his deal that's an average to above average offensive player, or you're getting a middle reliever. But would I trade Jake Myers for a middle reliever? Yeah.
I would.
Yeah, I would.
I'd have done it yesterday. I'd have done it before the season started last year. So I'm totally fine with trading Jake Myers.
And I because his defense, I think he does have a little bit of value. Not tons of value, a little bit of value. 0053, we should pick up Yuli and Tommy Pham. Brown dropped the ball on personnel. I have been a Pham guy. I'm not a fan of signing Pham in the offseason, though. I don't think that you need a right-handed bat. I think you need a left-handed outfield bat. So I'm kind of out on Pham. And Pham hasn't been as good second half of this year as he was in the first half. I did want him at the deadline, and I did want him in the offseason. But I'm out on him going forward. I've been against the idea of Yuli, and I'm going to take the L there. Yuli Gurriel would have helped the Astros this year. I was wrong about that. But he's not a guy I'm adding in the offseason.
No, because he's older. And I don't know what, you know, after this season, no matter what he's found to be in the fountain of youth to be able to do what he's doing in this short sample size once he got added to the Royals, I don't believe he could do that for a full 162 and be a guy that you can count on as an everyday guy that's going to produce for you offensively. No matter, and I assume he still could play some defense, but I'm not doing that. Not at his age, no. But kudos to him for what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I do wish the Astros would have signed him this season after you had the injuries and you were like searching for players. I wouldn't have hated the idea of Yuli playing first base against lefties instead of like Zach DiCenzo. I think it would have been a decent platoon. Singleton against righties, Yuli against lefties. And he's been helpful in the postseason, gives you a good at-bat. Had a really good at-bat against Gerrit Cole. Like, he's not your answer at first base next year, though. 4661, trade that noodle arm, soft, bad word boy. I think he's referring to Jake. How's your arm these days? Is your arm still okay?
Yeah.
He's not talking about you?
I'm pretty sure that's Jake, yeah.
I think he's talking about Jake. 3338 says that Jake Myers is worth more than King of Twitch. No doubt about that. No doubt about it. I mean, if Jake Myers is a free agent right now, Jake Myers would make $7 million a year, $7 to $10 million a year on his defense alone. I think Myers would get that.
I think he'd get, what's Bader getting? Bader's getting five?
Let's look it up.
I think he's Harrison Bader-esque in terms of what he could bring financially.
Bader's getting 10 and a half.
Oh, my
I told you defensive center fielders go for double digits. And Kiermaier's getting $11 million.
Good night, man. Jake, yeah, good on you for just having one skill set and going to get cash in.
So, Jake, if Jake Myers was a free agent today, I think he would get at least a one-year, $7 million deal on defense alone. I have no doubt in my mind. And if King of Twitch was a free agent today, he might get a ham sandwich. He might get a ham sandwich. So I do agree with the texter that Jake Myers carries a ton more value than King of Twitch. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What is your car wreck of the day? Car wreck of the day, 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, the word for mybookie.ag. I'm telling you right now, we've got four baseball games. One's already completed, but you got one going on, two more tonight. All kinds of baseball on the TV. You want to make it more interesting because your home team's not in it? Well, maybe you want to put some money down and really have a team to root for. Go to mybookie.ag when you do it, because mybookie.ag is always going to take care of their customers, and they're doing it for new customers right now that sign up. When you sign up for the first time at mybookie.ag and use our promo code BET975, you're going to cash in instantly before you even bet on a game, because using that promo code right now will have mybookie doubling your first deposit up to $1,000. That means you're going to have more money in your account instantly, more games you can bet on, more chances you can win. And while you're getting signed up, you're also going to be signed up into their rewards program, MyBookie Plus. When you sign up and you enter the MyBookie Plus program, there's different tiers. And as you frequent MyBookie more and you place more bets, you move up in terms of the rewards program by getting to the higher tiers. The MyBookie Plus program will give you better promotions, better chances that you can cash in, and all kinds of rewards as you continue to play at MyBookie.ag. Just always remember our promo code BET975, because it's going to open all those doors and get you all the best promotions. On top of that, even when there's games not going on and they got all the games, whatever you're watching on TV, there's a really good chance that it's on MyBookie.ag and you can bet on it. But even when there's not, there's live dealers standing by with casino games like poker and blackjack. So you don't have to fly to Vegas or drive to Louisiana. Just get your gambling on with mybookie.ag. They are the ones that I always tell you to go to. And I'll tell you this. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. Mybookie.ag. Promo code BET975.
ESPN. 97.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
You prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
What is your car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Participation on the Twitch. They said Nico Collins hamstring. Car wreck of the day. It's a fair point. Landed on the IR. What do you got, Blinkers? What is your car wreck of the day?
One of the ones that I saw is the fact that...
I didn't click your link on your car wreck because I wanted to react organically. That's what we call in the business.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So with all the different changes that are going on with regional sports networks, we're seeing more and more teams trying to do their own thing. And then with that, they're going to try and get more creative. Chicago Sports Network last night debuted their first Bulls telecast, and they got creative with their in-game scoreboard. It's not across the top of the screen. It's not across the bottom of the screen. It is a massive banner that comes down from the left-hand corner of the screen that blocks out players, referees, and a significant portion of in-game action that is extremely annoying. It is not going to be looked on favorably by Bulls fans.
This isn't going to last.
No, it can't.
There's no way it can last in the regular season.
What do they call it in the business? The TV business, and they don't put me in the TV business because I have a face for radio. They call it a lower third. Your lower third
scorebug.
Your lower third scorebug. This is the upper third.
Yeah, there's a reason why they call it lower third, because the lower third doesn't block the action.
Yeah, this is left upper third. This is quite easily the worst scorebug that I have ever seen. Easily, and there's been bad scorebugs.
Oh,
terrible scorebugs. I've seen scorebugs at the top before. Didn't Fox used to do that in their NFL coverage?
Yeah, Fox
used to do
across the
top. They would have scorebugs
up
on the top.
Yeah.
But theirs was thin.
But again, it's like a crawl. So you can still condense the screen itself, the area where the game's going on. You don't lose anything by that. This is actually blocking key portions of the floor and game action that you can't have.
It takes up, I think, 15% of what's on your television. It's upper third, left third. It is like a pillar. It's not like it doesn't go left to right. It goes up to down, and it goes all the way to about the middle of your television.
Some people were trying to explain it like if a team hung a banner in the rafters, only they hung it on the left-hand corner of your screen instead.
That's a great point.
It's just awful. And I've been a part of this with all our years with Rockets TV and all that stuff, where I got a little too creative sometimes with the bug, and I tried to get like full logos or whatever. believe me, we changed it rather quickly when we found out how it looked like when actual game X. They have to change it.
Is that the word we're using, creative?
I think they were trying to be creative.
No, you. You said you were being creative.
Oh, well, okay.
yeah, this is awful. This is bad. I think this is a Seattle Mariner banner, though. This is the only banner that Seattle Mariner fans get.
Yeah, maybe so.
Maybe they should, implement this in Seattle so they can see what a banner looks like. I want to nominate all of the social media umpires after the Manny Machado play yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Not only the social media umpires. John Smoltz was clueless. Who is the John Davis? Who is the play-by-play guy?
He's the Dodgers play-by-play guy.
Joe Davis, clueless. They go to the studio afterwards. Alex Rodriguez is saying that if Freeman would have hit him in the back harder and better, that he would have been called out. What? Alex Rodriguez pretended like it was a runner's lane interference, which only existed first base. Jeter had no clue. Big Poppy had no clue. Kevin Burkhardt tried to say the rule, but he had no idea. Alex Rodriguez is acting like it's a reviewable play. It is not. Everybody is citing that, well, Manny Machado can be there because he has his right. That is his base path. A base path is not defined until a tag is attempted on a base runner. You had so many people yesterday, whether it was commentators, whether it was studio analysis, Hall of Famers, Twitter, social media, folks that have no clue, that are citing the wrong rule.
Did you
and
know
I
it?
Argued with them way too much. Yeah,
did you
I did.
Know it?
I yeah, you know why I did? You know why
you
this triggers me? No, because of Yasmani Grandal in the playoffs against the White Sox back in the day.
But
that triggered
first base,
me then.
Right?
No, it was at the plate. It was a throw coming to the plate.
Okay.
You can only have runner's lane interference once the runner is 45 feet up the line. Yasmani Grandal is not 40 feet up the line. And you can only have runner's lane interference on a play at first base. Yuli threw to the plate. Grandal took three steps into the infield and chicken winged the baseball.
Right.
Yes, he's not out of the – yes, the runner's lane doesn't exist that play. Yes, there's not a base path that play because a tag has not been attempted. But always and forever, the one rule that trumps all – a runner is out for interference when he's intentionally interfering with a thrown ball. Now, you could argue with me and say Machado didn't do it intentionally. You could say, well, you know, he's just taking the angle. He doesn't know he's going to be hit by the thrown ball. That's fine. I respect that opinion. I would respectfully disagree. But don't start citing all these rules that do not apply to that specific play.
I think
the only rule, official baseball rule 6.0110, the runner is out for interference when he intentionally interferes with a thrown ball. Manny Machado, in my opinion, did that yesterday, and Yasmani Grandal did it against the Astros, whatever year that was, and quite frankly, it ruined Lance McCullers. Because if the Astros win that game, Lance McCullers doesn't pitch the next day, and Lance McCullers is pitching and winning Cy Youngs.
Joel, I think
right,
you
I don't
and
believe
I,
the last
I,
one.
I think you and I should just get out of the way and let Jeremy.
I 100%
believe
he's on one. John ran on this, so I'm gonna let him go.
He just quoted.
Because the one thing that was the first indication, if you knew the rule or not, was the Dodgers didn't come running out of the dugout.
That
no one
bad
came
managing
trying to make a stink about it. And after the game, one, Freddie Freeman said, I would have done the same thing.
But he didn't say it was illegal.
No, I'm saying. He said, I would have done the same thing.
Which
he said,
smart.
He cited what you said, which is the fact that there is no creative base path like out of the baseline, like first base.
But you can't intentionally interfere with a thrown ball.
But also, the other key was after the game when Machado said, back to playing for Buck Showalter in those days. This is something we knew about that we worked on and we were aware of every single year in spring training.
And for the record, it was a genius base running play by me. I'm not saying that he was wrong. I'm not saying he was dumb. I'm saying if I was an umpire and I saw it, I would call him out because I do believe he intentionally interfered with the thrown ball. But what's the risk if Manny Machado doesn't do that and gets out of the way of the throw? He's out at second base. It's potentially a double
play. Yeah.
So if he does get called for interference there, what happens? There wasn't a runner at third base. He gets called out. The batter is given first base. It would have been the same exact situation. So what do you do if you're Machado? You try to wear it. You try to get hit. You try to force the umpire to make a courageous call that is almost never made. I'll concede that. That call is rare to be called because the umpires are looking at different things. They're only going to call it if it's super, super egregious. I concede that. My biggest beef, though, is all these people citing these rules that do not apply to that specific play. 6.0110. Official baseball rule. What are you nominating, Brian? Sorry.
It's all right.
By the way, I'm rooting for the Padres.
I'll quickly nominate the use of the phrase 1,000 instead of saying 1,000. I'll nominate delegation instead of relegation. And then apparently I'm going to have to nominate the Raiders for days after Antonio Pierce was liking things on social media about Devontae Adams being gone. He's then now telling the media, oh, yeah, he was never not a Raider. He's going to be here, and when he's healthy, he's playing with us.
I saw Adams said he officially requested a trade today.
Not according to this guy. There's a quote from
Adams was on
Antonio
with Kay Adams,
Pierce.
And he was accused of being a liar because he was saying a whole bunch of things that wasn't true about the request.
So is he going to get traded or not?
He's gone.
Think so? I think the Saints are out, though. With Derek Carr's injury, I don't think he'll be a Saint. 0426 wants to nominate me for saying 1,000. What's winning? I think I should win for 1,000. That was pretty bad.
I just think you should win for the rant.
All right, I win for a bunch of different stuff because I'm a winner. It's what I do. All right, does it for us. Thanks to Brian for the hard work. He's blank on Branham. Hall of Fame coming up at 7. Brad Gilmore, the two-time jobber of the WWE, Booker T.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the long-lasting power you need with Energizer. Menards has the largest in-stock selection of Energizer batteries. They provide solid power for flashlights, remotes, and so much more. Right now, save big on Energizer batteries. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.